Welcome back into the Godly Young Men Podcast, episode 146, getting closer and closer to 150. We said at the start of last episode, we are going to be doing an Ask Me Anything for episode 150. If you are part of the Discord, part of the Godly Young Men Podcast Discord, we have a channel already set up that's just specifically for that episode where you can throw a question in there. It does not have to be podcast related. It can be if you want, but it can be literally Ask Me Anything. Obviously keeping everything appropriate, but yes, that's what we're going to do for episode 150. We're really excited about it. If you're not a member of the Discord yet, the link to join is in the description of this episode and the last one, and then all of them actually. So if you want to join the Discord, just click on the description either on YouTube or on Apple Podcasts, and that is how you will access that. But yeah, we're really excited about just kind of having a laid back chill. I guess all of our episodes are kind of laid back and chill, but yeah, well, we're just gonna have a pretty fun casual episode answering everybody's questions. And so thank you for listening, but that is coming up soon, so make sure you get your questions in on the Discord. Any thoughts on that, Joe?
We thought about doing a live, you know, like, but it's tough. We got the great thing about the Discord, we got guys I think in Australia or New Zealand, we got guys all in Europe, we got guys all over the place, and so the idea of finding a time where most people could be on be really difficult. So we'll just do it ahead of time. But we're going to look to engage a little bit more on that front as well, maybe doing voice chats or things like that. But yes, we look forward to all your questions coming our way.
That's right. All right, so we're back with part two this week. If you did not get to watch last week, I'd encourage you to maybe turn this one off and go back and watch the first, or go back and watch last week's first. There's an article that we are continuing to go over by Mark Granza entitled Men of the Future, 20 Rules for Healthy Masculinity, A Guide for Young Men in the Age of Social Media. And what we did last week was we just took the first 10 rules that he has, and me and Joe just kind of discussed them. We did not agree with all of them, but we basically were just asking, do we agree, do we disagree, and why? There were some very interesting ones on there from last week. I'd encourage you, like I said, I'm not going to preview them. I would encourage you to go check them out. But that's basically the setup that we're going to do once again for this episode, is we're going to go through his 11 through 20 rules with an honorable mention at the end, and we're just going to ask each other, do we agree or disagree? We have not prepped any thoughts as far as, like, I don't know what Joe's going to say. He doesn't know what I'm going to say, because these are... Well, we were talking about this beforehand. What we like about this article, even though we don't agree with everything in the article, is it's very thought-provoking.
Very thought-provoking.
A lot of original thought. A lot of the things you will read online are just kind of recycled, same, you know, nothing mentally stimulating, as bad as that sounds. And this certainly was. Any introductory thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know this gentleman. I just know I really like the way he thinks, even though I don't always agree. I like the way he thinks. I like that he's well-read. I also like the idea that he's got well-thought-out processes and things like that. Like, he has really put the time and effort into why he believes certain things. So though there are going to be things specifically on this one that we disagree with, and it's the same thing as last one. We kept saying, like, by and large, or there's nuance or whatever it is, because generally I see speaking, his point. Yeah. And this is just a quick word before we jump in. This is why it's important to hear each other out. This is why it's important to learn as a godly young man how to communicate what you believe in, and because you might be able to win people over. And there are things in here that it's like, you know what? Man, I don't know that I thought about it too much ahead of time, but the way that he's kind of presented it and everything else has swayed me one way or the other, or has at least given me something to think about. We have that power in our words to be able to do that with one another. So be thinking about we talk about that all the time, be thinking about your why. I love his why. I love that he has thought these things out, even though I disagree with him in some of these things. And so shout out to this guy. Again, I've never met him before, but I think it's a great article. Make sure to go read that if you get a chance. If you have not already, it'll be in the description. Will, I'm going
to
start with you.
I was hoping I would get to kick him off first. No, go ahead.
Number 11, 1 to 10 for us, but for this episode, but number 11 on his list, find out all your parents' flaws. Agree or disagree?
So Joe and I were pretty much in sync perfectly on the last episode of 1 through 10 about the agree, disagree. So I'm really curious to hear what Joe thinks about this one. He says, find out all your parents' flaws. I disagree with this, actually. Mm-hmm. I think it is valuable to know some of your parents' flaws and to learn from those flaws. I would certainly, not that I have a list, but like I could list some of my parents that I want to learn from, both in my marriage and in my parenting. But I guess maybe my quibble is over the word all. Find out all your parents' flaws, is what he says. No matter how much of a role model your father is to you, he's not perfect. Obviously, that's true. He says, discover why and learn to appreciate him also when he's showcasing his flaws. I'd agree with that as well. But my quibble is kind of, again, like I don't want to know all my parents' flaws. And maybe this is kind of the naivete in me. Like, I know my dad's not Superman, but I still want to have that Superman mystique a little bit, I guess. And so... I don't know that I need to know all of my parents. All their mistakes, every single thing that they did, all of their character weaknesses. And like, again, I think it's good and healthy to know some of them. But one of the things he says in here is you will learn to view no one as God and understand how fragile the world is if you do this. And it's like, I guess my take is I don't need to know all my parents' flaws to know that already. Like, obviously, I know my parents aren't God. He says that marks your transition. Becoming aware of every single one of your parents' flaws marks your official transition. Marks your official transition to adulthood. I disagree with that. I think there's other ways to transition into adulthood. You don't have to know every single one of your parents' flaws. Again, don't misunderstand me. Recognize your parents' flaws, point them out, learn from them. But I guess maybe I'm nitpicking here, but like, I don't personally want to know every single one of my parents' flaws. I think sometimes, yeah, I want to have that mystique a little bit that you know, these are my parents who I love and respect. So I don't know. That's kind of where I'm at, Joe. What are your thoughts on that?
I agree with this one.
Okay.
I agree with this one.
First disagreement in the two episodes.
So I love the way that he has laid this one out. And to be fair, I do agree with your point in the fact that I don't think I need to go on a fact-finding mission to like, okay, where's every mistake they've ever made? On the other hand, the point behind this is so important. I've talked about this in therapy. I think I've talked about this here. It is a powerful day in a young man's life when he learns that his dad is not Superman fully. If it happens too soon, it's traumatic. If it happens too late, it's traumatic, in my opinion. So I've worked with people where, man, they're in their 30s before they really come to understand, like, dad is not perfect. I think that's too late. I've also worked with one kid. He was in the getaway car while his dad was robbing a convenience store at 4 years old. And kind of like, well, why is dad pointing a gun at somebody? Just asking questions of, like, this doesn't seem right. Why is he running out with things that are not his? 4 years old. He's having to come to grips with the fact that, yeah, that's not kosher. That's not right. Those things take place. That's very traumatic to hear that. It's really important for a young man, though, in time to learn his parents' flaws and specifically his father's flaws, and to know that I can still love him. I can still appreciate him. I can still, he's still my dad. I'm not going to disown him because of all the flaws. It gives you such a more robust understanding of life, of your wife, of your kids, of everybody else, and of yourself when you realize all of the flaws. You look in the mirror and you see your flaws, but you're also able to understand you can still be a good guy. It's really important. What we see in today's culture is like, once you learn about your parents' flaws, you cut them off. The same way with the founding fathers, we see some of their flaws and we just cut them off. Like they're dead to us. No, they're imperfect men who did imperfect things. That's okay. We can still love them because of some of the other things that they accomplished. And so he's just got some great lines in here. So I once again encourage you to read this article of like, make sure Christ is your North Star. Make sure you're pointing toward him.
Which is great.
Which is great. And I you wouldn't disagree with that either. But I think it's good for a young guy to be able to kind of pick apart some of his parents' flaws and still love them in spite of that.
And I think maybe that's what I'm concerned about is the idea that if you're going on a, like you said, a mission,
a fact-finding mission, yeah,
every single flaw, like your honor and respect for your parents will decrease because it's like, man, they had all these problems similar to the founding fathers thing, and I'm very wary of that. Joe, I was curious your thoughts on that line of like, becoming aware of every single one of your parents' flaws marks your official transition to adulthood. Like, I guess my point, I feel like he's correct. I feel like he's overplaying it. Like, he's maybe hyperbolic, exaggerating, whatever. Like, I don't think you have to learn about every single flaw your parents have to hit a lot of these things that are important that he's talking about.
I would agree with that. His line, though, right after that, there are no adults once you become an adult. Adults, quote unquote, once you become an adult. That's really important for somebody to be able to start looking at the world less in a rosy fashion of like, man, there's you know, the good guys and bad guys. Like, it's, man, there's a lot of gray. There's a lot of nuance. There's a lot of things like that. One of the first places you learn it is with your parents of realizing, sure, wow, I really don't like these things that they did. The more that I learn about them, the more I see some of their flaws. But on the other hand, I can now deal with the gray areas of life in the adulthood as I go forward and recognize I can fully call that out and say, that's not good, and I can still love them, show up to Thanksgiving, call them on the phone all the time, things like that, and know that that's okay as well. And so, again, I see your point. Yeah, I know we got to move on.
As well,
yeah. Yeah, I know we got to move on, but it is so important for you to be able to call out your parents' flaws and still love them. That's the key in all of that, is to come to the other side of it.
Because they did part of the same thing with you for 18 years, and still do, most likely.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. They see your flaws and they still love you anyway. So you're starting to transition into adulthood. And until you get to that point where it's like, man, dad's still Superman, he's still perfect. Like, no, he's not. Your dad is flawed in some way. And maybe he's really good at hiding those flaws, whatever it is. You know what I mean? I don't know. But it's important for you to be able to see some of those. And I think that's a big part of being a man.
It's really fun that we didn't prep this ahead of time.
Yeah, I know. It's good.
All right, Joe, number 12. So thankful you're going first on this one. Number 12, and I'm going to read the whole paragraph, actually.
Yeah, go for it. It's probably good for some context. Yeah.
So he says, practice your inner feminine. Practice your inner feminine. All right, so he says, every man, no matter how masculine, has an inner feminine. This is not the same as being feminine. It only means being in touch with it as a larger effort to appreciate all sides of life. He says, I do this a lot with beauty. Love of beauty is not necessarily associated with female traits. Still, appreciation for beauty in life generally is, much like being more interested in fiction over nonfiction. For instance, I like searching for great representations of motherhood in art, as well as in everyday life, and listening to Celine Dion. This makes me more appreciative of women and will make me more appreciative of my wife's role when I get married. Also, doing this will make you feel comfortable hanging out with women your age and in general. Making friends with women will never come across as natural with men until you understand why they think differently. Hint, it has to do with the fact that they're biologically different and play a distinct role in society. Duh, he says. Agree or disagree, Joe, with practice your inner feminine?
Somebody's been reading Carl Jung. I agree with this one. Carl Jung has, and he referenced it last week, he's referenced him earlier in the psycho guy. Psychoanalysis, psychoanalytic theory from Carl Jung. He has this idea of anima and animus, which is kind of the yin and yang, and that every male has feminine characteristics, every female has masculine characteristics, but is intended to be, you know, the black dot in the midst of the white and vice versa. So I agree with that. I do think that it's important for guys to be able to get in touch with more of the softer tones from time to time, not consistently, not the, you know, you're so weak, because then if you're feminine all the time, what's masculinity? At some point you've kind of morphed into the other way around, and that's not healthy. So, but it also is important to understand that, yeah, you have feminine characteristics. You have things that are like, again, the appreciation of beauty, the soft word, the ability to cry. We talked about that last week. The having a great time with young kids, like traditionally masculinity is like, we're tough and things like that. No, there's also a time to just, I don't know, be present in life and things like that. I'm not saying that's inherently feminine, but it is more, again, kind of associated with kind of the softer side of things. Mm. Beauty in color, beauty in music, beauty in things like that, and in art, in architecture. Those things matter, and it may not be inherently masculine to really think about like aesthetics in your house or to think about colors and as they go together. On the other hand, that's really important. That's why we don't wear plaid and stripes, you know, type of thing. It's important to kind of connect a little bit with your inner feminine. What are your thoughts on
so
this?
I agree with this one
okay.
as well.
Sorry, I'm taking all the thoughts.
No, good. But you echoed it well. I was going to ask you not to out you or put you on the spot. What is your inner feminine that you practice? I have an answer of like, for me, but I was curious for you. I'll go ahead and give you mine since sure. I'm putting you on the spot. Like, because I'm trying not to think of like trivial things like listening to Taylor Swift. Like, yes, I have a lot of Taylor Swift on my phone. I like some of her music, not her newer music is not that great, but her older stuff's good. I feel like he's not really talking about that. Right. It's more of like, do you appreciate a sunset? Do you appreciate that kind of stuff? So my answer would be, I really enjoy either movies or books or shows or whatever with a really good romance angle, I suppose. Like a angle or a thread in the, I guess. I find myself more riveted when there's a, you know, a romance going on. Like in romantic comedies or many movies, those are not my favorite genre by any means, but like an action movie or a good show where there's a good subplot of a romance, I find myself really enjoying that. So maybe, I don't even know if that's what he's talking about. That's kind of what came to mind for me.
I appreciate fashion. That's a good one with the romance. I appreciate fashion. I'm not the most fashionable guy. I realize that. But on the other hand, I try to match the colors, things like that. But I can also, I have an eye for fashion in terms of just appreciation and understanding that. Not in the crazy fashion world, you know, those type of things. But just, you'll see a guy in a three-piece suit and you're like, man, that's nice. I can appreciate that. The other thing is I'm kind of a neat freak. I really like things clean. I like things orderly. I like things organized where they need to be. And so, yeah, that doesn't mean my room is always perfect. But by and large, the making of the bed, the sweeping the floor, the, you know, having things in a specific order is very much where I am.
Joe, we spent like 13 minutes on the first two.
I know. We're going to have to bounce.
The first two were really good. I think
number 13. Yes, your turn. Right, your turn. Yeah. Number 13. Praise qualities praise qualities unlike yours in other men. Praise qualities unlike yours in other men. So I'm going to actually read that. Sorry. So there's a little bit. Let me give a little more background. He says, this is vital. If not, you're just another masculinity guru online. Example, a man doesn't know or doesn't have to know combat to be a warrior. With that said, I have no problem recognizing that being a warrior also means being equipped to survive in war. It doesn't mean I wouldn't be able to survive in one. It just means I don't feel the need to hide that element on that list for fear of being seen as incomplete, quote unquote. I remember when I was a kid, men fighting dragons with swords is what I admired. Just because I learned to slay a dragon in my head, no joke, doesn't make me Leonidas. Leonidas. I always draw that. Leonidas, the first, I think is what it is. And it won't stop me from praising Spartans, as Spartans should learn to honor someone like Gandhi, arguably the most dangerous man in the 20th century, for his exceptional warrior discipline mindset. Recognizing qualities in men that differ from you will help keep your ego in check and foster genuine ambition.
Not to cut you off, I agree with this one. I think it's a very healthy thing to be able to look at another guy and say, man, I really appreciate that trait. I really appreciate how he, you know, he does this. I like this. And because what you'll run into, the ego point, is like everything that I do is the exact way that everybody else should do things. It's a boomer trait. It's also, it can be a young men trait as well, of like, you know, again, like the way I do things, that's the best way to do it. Or this, all the best traits in the world are the ones that I have, and all the worst traits in the world are the ones that I don't have. Like, I think that's a pretty lack of self-awareness type of trait. And so we don't have to spend too much time on this one. I would agree. Like, look around at the men in your life that maybe have a different trait than you. And if it's a good one, praise it. I'm good with it. How about you?
I'd agree as well. We can, you know, ambition is that key. Yeah. Is being ambitious, using it as a way to be ambitious and to say, man, I love that they're this way. And it also gives more gravitas to like it's outside your wheelhouse, and you're recognizing that as a trait of somebody else. And so when you are praising them for something or thanking them for something like that, it shows you've gone out of your way. It's not just like, hey, yeah, you're really good at this too. It's like, I really appreciate that you're this. I know I'm not that, but I want to get there.
All right, number 14, Joe. Find out what you love, not what you hate. Find out what you love, not what you hate. Just briefly, I won't read the whole thing, but he says, platforms like X train us to figure out what we hate. So it's essential to constantly remind ourselves of what we find beautiful, meaningful, dear, and so on, and to practice it in the real world. This could be as simple as leaving your phone at home and taking regular walks in nature or having breakfast at your favorite diner. What are your thoughts on this one? Agree, disagree?
I very much agree.
Run to, not away, right?
Run to, not away. I've said it a bazillion times. Run to, not away. And this is that personified of like, yeah, learning. It's easy to hate things. It's easy to run from things. It's easy
rage
to
bait,
yeah, exactly, rage bait and to get up in arms about XYZ. It's a lot harder to say, this is what I like, this is what I love, this is what I'm about. The more you curate that of this, it's kind of the same thing we talk about style. It's the same thing as like, oh, that's horrible. Okay, yeah, but what's your style? What do you think looks good? It's really important for you to be able to concisely say, this is what I think about XYZ, and this is what I love and what I'm chasing. So I'm a big fan of this one.
Yeah, I agree as well. I love his last line. Remember, no war has ever been won by an army that didn't already have a place they called home. Really appreciate it. And I think the people who really understand and practice this are the ones that are happier in life. If you're just going around looking for stuff to be mad at all the time, like, find the stuff you love.
And his last line's killer. Then we'll move on. And before you sell an idea, figure out what you wouldn't sell in life and would die for before you sell it. I'm going to read that one more time. Before you sell an idea, figure out what you wouldn't sell in life and would die for before you sell it. That's a great line as well of like, you got to figure out what matters in life, what you love, what is important to you, what is an absolute, like, this is what makes it all worth it, you know, to that line of coming home from war. Like, that's what makes it worth it. It's not just that I hate, but what I love. So that's great. Mine to yours, yep. I believe. Number 15, never try to make people feel sorry for you.
I agree with this one. A lot more agrees on this back half than the one that we did last week with the first 10. He says in the middle of this, what you should never do is to actively try to make people feel sorry for you for attention. Number one, because it's just wrong. And number two, because it's not going to help you either. I would agree with this. Some of these are some of the most, I hate to use this word, but annoying people in the world are the ones who are kind of compliment fishing. Like, no, they call them pick me's now. Yep. Like, nobody ever does this, or nobody ever tells me I'm good. Like, shut up. Like, nobody likes to be around that person. And he says at the start, like, it's not the same as hiding your pain, but it's not, you're not going around looking for people to build you up and constantly needing someone to pat you on the back and say, no, you actually are really good at that. Like, yeah, this is kind of a pet peeve of mine, is when, you know, the compliment fisher person or the one that always needs other people to kind of build them up. Yeah, no, don't try to make people feel sorry for you.
Yeah, he's got a line in there about surrounding yourself with friends that, you know, will say, oh, it's all going to be okay type of thing. Like, no, sometimes you need your friends to call you out and just to say that's not okay. In the world of therapy, the internal family systems side of therapy, they've got one, an internal part called King Baby, and it's exactly that of the wallower. Nobody likes me, and then everybody comes in, no, we like you, we like you. And it's like, okay.
Which, this is what women do, by the way.
Correct.
This is a very, talk about feminine trait. This is a very feminine trait.
Correct. Is, I want everybody to like me, and the way that we get that is by victimizing and you know, by going into that where everybody now wants to build us up. So we always go low so they can build us up, and because we can't build ourselves up. It's one of the worst traits, and a woman, a female, will find that very off-putting. I'll tell you that. Yeah. Very, very off-putting, so don't do that.
Yeah. All right, your turn, or my turn to ask you. That's right. Number 16, learn to pray for a burden. Learn to pray for a burden. And he's specifically talking about basically asking for God to bring a burden into your life is essentially the way that I'm reading that. Agree or disagree?
So this is a doozy right here. Yeah, this one took a little while. I still don't know where I agree. I think I agree. I agree with the concept of letting, you know, praying for God to bring something into your life to train you and to, you know, it's considered all joy when you encounter various trials, testing your faith, produce endurance, right? And that'll have its perfect result. Like, that is kind of what he's getting at in James 1 there, in my opinion, of like asking for a burden. Ask to fight the evil inside of you and help will come. Ask for favors or for someone, quote unquote, to show up in your life and fix you. God is generous, so it might work, and I hope it does for you. But I guarantee you, asking for the strength to fix yourself on your own is a prayer that will always be answered. The idea is to fix yourself. So I do agree that if the burden is what it takes for you to be the man of God that you're supposed to be, so be it. Pray for the burden. But I think you could say, you could reframe this, and I really agree with it, which is pray for God to fix you, basically. And if that's through burden, great. And if that's through, you know, a word of advice from somebody, that's great. That's not always a burden. Like, the goal here is not for the burden itself, just to depress you. The goal is, I want something that's going to make me more like Christ.
Well, and where I struggle, because I it sounds like you're about 51-49 on agree versus disagree.
Yes.
I would probably be 51-49 on disagree versus, I think I'd slightly disagree with this more. And I think the reason is because I understand. So James 1 says, my brethren, count it all joy when you fall into various trials, knowing that the testing of faith produces patience. Unless I'm just blanking, I can't recall an example of anybody in the Bible ever actively praying for a burden to get added to their life. And so correct me if you think of one off the top of your head. Jesus, even in the garden, prays for the burden to be taken away from him.
Yeah.
And so I agree with the principle, which is why it's kind of 51-49
for
me.
Yeah, exactly, like, exactly.
It, especially because I think a lot of our prayers, and I'm guilty of this as well, can be, you know, God, please help all these good things to happen to me and help me get the job and help me to make more money and, like, kind of treating God like a genie in the bottle, which is not great, and kind of the strengthening of yourself, the testing by fire, I think is a good thing. I don't know that I could ever, like, God, please bring something difficult into my life. Like, I can't get there mentally. I think maybe a better way would be, like, God, help me to count it joy when something does, when something is, help me to look to you. Help me, you know, not my will, your will, kind of like Jesus did in the garden. So it's close. I think overall I would disagree with this one just because I don't see any biblical precedent for it, unless you can correct me on that. Like, I can't recall anybody ever really doing that.
I can't think of one, no. Good thoughts. Good thoughts. Number 17, find evil inside of you before you fight it in others.
I agree. I think he says, at no point in human history have young people been as incapable of self-reflection as today. I think his point overall, not to just give you the whole thing here, is that instead of always looking for problems in other people, man, start with yourself. That's Matthew 7, right? Take the plank out of your own eye before you pull the speck out of somebody else's eye. He says this is why young men need to take regular breaks from social media. Finding evil within you will be the most brutal fight of your life, but the rule will be huge. I love that. It's kind of the idea of, like, man, let me control what I can control. I can't control that, you know, for the alleged social justice warriors, right? Like, what everybody else is doing. How about I look at myself and, you know, make your own bed, clean your own room? I think it's a very immature thing if you are constantly kind of pointing out what's wrong with everybody else and never looking around like, man, what do I need to improve on? What do I need to get better at? And so I would agree with this one. How about you?
Yeah, me too. This speaks to kind of the parent one that we talked about of, like, finding the flaws in your parents. You got to be able to find the flaws in yourself. I love this line in here. It says, unless you're a veteran, chances are that you are completely unaware that during a zombie apocalypse, you'd be the first to close the door on your mutual. You have not found the coward, the murderer, and the concentration prison guard within you. This makes you a great poster, but it also makes you weak and extremely dangerous for society, not to mention unequipped to fight evil in the world. He's not wrong. A lot of people have not found the darkness inside. It's kind of like, oh, I would be there. And then, you know, it's what Peter did.
It's easy to say. Yeah.
Peter said that, like, oh, I won't deny you. No, I'll always be there. And then the moment that it gets tough, boom, all of a sudden the denier comes out and it's shocking to him later that he could have done it. And he breaks down in tears and, you know, everything else. And there's a lot of shame that comes with it. He didn't know that was in him until there's there. So then the question becomes, how do we find the evil inside us? Like, do we have to go through it and come face to face with it? Or is this something that we can better understand? Like, I think there's an inner demon surrounding my anger that I have yet to discover, but I'm afraid of, type of thing. Like, I need to go to battle against that. Okay, maybe, you know, maybe just this is a time to look yourself in the mirror and say, what are my greatest struggles? And what is the evil maybe that's hiding inside me? Because we're all sinners, wretched sinners. We know that we don't have goodness in and of ourselves that comes through Christ. And so I'm a big fan of this one. I think he's right that it's so easy to go out, and you said it well, like it's so easy to go out and nitpick everybody else and try to fight the evil in the world. There's also a Jordan Peterson thing of like, before you try to go change the world, make sure that you're, you know, cleaning your own room, mm-hmm. like take care of your own stuff, make your own bed, type of thing. Get your stuff together before you go and critique everybody else's. It's in that same vein, but that thought of finding that evil inside you is really important.
Yeah, that's really good. All right, we're going to keep rolling. Number 18, practice turning the other cheek. Practice turning the other cheek. Joe, agree or disagree?
Disagree. I don't know where he got this from. No, yeah, just exactly. Kidding. Of course, being scripture, yes, I agree with this. He says it right off the bat, turning the other cheek is the most painful exercise you'll ever practice. He's not wrong. It is very, very difficult to allow yourself to be wronged, to allow yourself to be defrauded, as Paul would say, and to turn the other cheek in. Yeah, to seek reconciliation, to seek unity as much as possible, that can be one of the hardest things ever. But I also obviously agree, because that's what we're supposed to do from the Sermon on the Mount, is to turn the other cheek.
Yeah. Yeah, this one's tough. Of course, I agree. I got a couple thoughts. I don't want to bog us down. We're already 27 minutes in here. But so the first thought that I have is, I think it's a very important godly young man trait to learn not to punch down. And by that, I mean, you know, the weaker person, the inferior person. Even, like, this sounds terrible that you know, but this is just a part of life. Like, the person who has a lower quality of life than you, no need for you to strike back at that person.
Yeah.
No need for you to verbally. You see this on Facebook a lot, like with the people that are spitting at each other back and forth about a disagreement. Like, man, at some point you're just punching down. Like, that person lives a more miserable life than you. You've got a better life than them. Just be content to walk away and let them live their life. This is something that is very different. I know it's a little bit different than the turn the other cheek thing, but I think really where my mind goes with this is, like, just really learn to let stuff go. Full disclosure for all of our Godly Men podcast listeners, like, Joe and I and our families, you know, have had something come up over the last several months that has just been really difficult for us to go through. There's been, you know, we would feel that we were unfairly treated, unjustly treated, and this is not the first time, of course, in our lives, but it's one of those things that, man, the temptation is there to just, you know, punch back and kind of be vindictive and, you know, well, you did this, well, we're going to do this. And, you know, even like at work, like, somebody will do something like, man, why'd you have to do that? How about I just do it? It's like, I think at some point the mature response is just, man, I could just rear back and clock you as hard as I want to. And not in a physical, but like in a metaphorical sense, right? Like, I could be vindictive, I could lash back. And maybe I'm taking it out of context here, but I think his, you know, number, he has something in here about, you have to be willing to take the hits without letting him know that your refusal to fight back is also an act of defiance. You have to walk out of the confrontation without letting him know that you won, not even the tiniest satisfied looks on your face. Like, I don't know. The vindictiveness is kind of what comes to mind for me there. So
he also has a line in here. You need to feel really tempted to escalate the confrontation. If you're scared of escalating, it doesn't count. We've talked about the idea of the Ferrari versus the Prius. Yeah. You could
escalate if you wanted to.
Yeah, exactly. Know? Well, you know, you're kind of a pipsqueak and a coward. And, well, you know, I turn the other cheek. Like, yeah, go figure. Because you didn't know anything else. Like, the turning the other cheek is coming from a place of power, of masculinity, of, like, yeah, I could dominate this person, and I'm choosing not to anyway because it's the right thing to do. I'm choosing not to be vindictive. This is honestly going to be one of the harder things. Every man is going to deal with something like this in his life. It's going to be a friend, or it's going to be a...
And probably multiple times.
Probably multiple times. Going to be, yeah, friend, church member, at its worst, the spouse sometimes, or even the kids, where you get, you know, they turn on you, turn your back, or turn their back, type of thing, and it just hurts, and you're really down and out. And the temptation is to come unglued. You got to be willing to take it. You got to be willing to make sure that you're trying to make it right no matter what. And the turning the other cheek, the other difficult thing, and I know we're spending some time on this, the other difficult thing, though, is how easy is it that turning the other cheek just becomes, again, wimpiness, or becomes, well, choose your battles. I turn the other cheek with my wife, like, no, there's no side of you where you wouldn't give in. Well, that's not right either. That's, again, not wimpy, or that's wimpiness. That's not masculinity. So the turning of the cheek, I mean, it's just, he's got some more things in this article that are worth reading. So make sure to look at that as to what matters when it comes to turning the other cheek. But really, it is prioritizing trying to get things right with the other person rather than the vindictiveness.
Well, I think the difference to me would be, like, do I need this person's respect? you need your wife's respect, and like you need your kids' respect, and so like that's an instance of like I'm not just gonna let it go and walk away.
Right.
The random dude on social media that you're arguing with, forget it. The person, you know, the coworker, or like I guess in some ways you could argue you need your coworker's respect, but like I guess what I'm getting is like the important people. Yeah, it's where the confrontation goes into the last episode we did, where he has one about learning to throw and take a punch. Like sometimes confrontation is necessary to get to a point where you can have that mutual respect. Whereas this one to me is a little bit more like squabbles, I guess. Yeah. That's kind of what I'm getting at. So yeah. Number 19.
Number 19 is for you. Fear God with all your heart.
I think I agree with this one.
Do you really?
Yeah.
Hot take.
I love his first couple lines here. He says, God loves you in ways you can't and will never comprehend, 100% true, but true ambition and respect will never come from being aware of that. God has expectations of us, and he will strike us dead if we disobey. Think of him as thunder and executioner, as far as you're concerned, who has the right to send you burning and screaming into the lake of fire for eternity. Whew. Yeah, that's great. We did an episode on Think Deeper a couple weeks ago about hell and hellfire and brimstone, the sermons and stuff like that. And so obviously the point he's making here is about literal fear. And I think there's a balance there between fear and love. But multiple times throughout the Bible, we see that we need to fear God. So yeah, I fully agree with
this. It's beginning of wisdom, right? Yeah. Fearing God is the beginning of wisdom. Yes, a terror, not just a, oh, well, I respect him. Yeah, I respect his opinion. Like, no, this is the God of the universe we're talking about. It's okay to be in terror of him. While fully recognizing, man, he's loving. And that's so difficult for us to get in our minds of how can he be all loving and all terrifying at the same time? Like, those things don't seem to go hand in hand, but that's one kind of drives the other. Like, the fact that he is so terrifying and yet still loves us, like, that drives how much we understand his love. But he loves us, and so, yeah, he wants what's best for us, which means what's not best for us is really bad, really, really bad. And that's where the terror comes in. So yeah, I agree with this one.
All right, number 20, we can spend very little time on this one. Yep. Pray, sing, and smile in the face of evil.
Agree. Yeah, fully agree.
Yeah.
Fully agree.
That's one of those that's very hard to do. So there's an honorable mention on here that we're going to spend a little time talking about. We will wrap up shortly. And then, but this is one, Joe, that I'm very curious your thoughts on. So it looks like, but if you read the article, it looks like this was one of his rules and he removed it. So we're considering an honorable mention.
Yep.
Number 20 for him was the pray, sing, and smile in the face of evil. But he has on here, don't marry your high school sweetheart, and he has in parentheses, yet.
Yet.
Agree or disagree? And just to kind of give the background, this was one of the longer sections of the article, so I'd encourage you to go read it. But he says, over the years, I've come to disagree with conservatives who advise men to get married young. It's not that I believe it's terrible advice, but it's always struck me as unambitious. Talks about, if you've never had a shot with the prettiest girl at the club, can you really say you have resisted temptation? So I guess his point is kind of like, you haven't really seen what the world has to offer if you just kind of marry your high school sweetheart. So, Joe, thoughts? That's me paraphrasing a bit, but what are your thoughts on that?
This is, we talked at the very beginning of like, I love the way he thinks, though I don't agree. I do disagree with this. I fully understand where he's coming from. So if he was sitting here, like I'd grant him several of those points. I think there's a level of like, kind of grass is always greener. Well, there's the next one, and there's always going to be some prettier girl that I could find. You got to be really careful of that, because that is the temptation, right? Is, man, I think I could do better. So you could settle down with a girl that is fantastic. She treats you incredible. She comes from a good home. She's very pretty, and all those things. But it's like, yeah, but how do I know? You know, if I go to college and I find somebody else, I'm not going to saddle myself, type of thing. Like, no, that's just stupidity. If you found somebody like that, that is a treasure. Keep that one. Got to be very careful. On the other hand, I do think there's guys that rush into it. They don't seek the advice from their parents, from their friends. People, everybody's telling them, please, guy, like, time out. Don't do this. Don't go further. This person's bad news for you. And he just goes headlong into it because he's young and naive and dumb and gets in this relationship. Yeah. And then he realizes, man, I kind of settled on this one, but he's stuck at that point. Yeah. So what he is speaking to is, don't settle yourself too soon. And that sounds horrible to say, but like, don't get stuck. Pretty much. And a lot of guys, when we push for getting married young, they do get stuck, and then they resent their spouse 5 years into marriage or 10 years into marriage as they get closer to 30, and they realize, man, I could have had somebody else. That is a terrible way of looking at it. And if you're looking at it that way, thank God for the wife that you have. I don't care how bad your relationship is. Thank God for the wife that you have. So we're not condoning that, but it's also just a reality of life that a lot of guys do end up having that regret. So I would say I don't agree with him on this, but there is a part of, make sure you know what you're doing when you're marrying young.
Well, in his defense, he did remove it, and he said, kind of his point with this idea is, like, for himself, once the fun began, kind of pursuing a lot of girls, he said, it was too hard. I hadn't rejected the idea of settling down young. I was trying, but I just suddenly realized that I could settle up, and that's when the game started. Just how up could I have settled? And that's kind of that never-ending pursuit thing, Joe, that you were talking about. And so, yeah, I disagree. Obviously, we've had episodes about marrying young and kind of the value of it. I think with all the qualifiers in place of like, don't just settle for the first person that comes along, don't settle for the wrong person, I do think marrying young earlier is better. High school sweetheart, college sweetheart, whatever. Like, I think that's a healthier thing because it forces you to get down to business a little quicker. You know, yep. Like, let me get going on my life. Let me get going on my career. Let me make sure I'm providing for my family. And we've had this episode before, so I don't want to beat a dead horse, but go ahead.
You had an interesting thought earlier, though, when we were talking to Jack about
feeling.
Yeah, and I want you to get into that of, like, feeling like getting ahead, and then we'll wrap up here. But I think that dovetails very well with this of, like, it's no longer okay to just wait and figure out life later. It's because it's just not happening.
Well, so I ran across a stat that 40 years old is the average now age for a first-time home buyer in the United States.
40?
40 years old, yeah, which is just mind-boggling.
Oh, man.
And, you know, you hear a lot about, and they are, prices going up, inflation, you know, average salary has not really gone up too much, but prices have gone up a ton. It's just a lot harder. And the thought that I had was, you know, previously, you know, you could get married young. You didn't have to. You could kind of... you know, party through college and not really figure out yourself until late 20s. And then you get settled down in your career. And then it wasn't too late, right? You catch back up, get a good job, and you were going to be just fine. Kind of the realization I had is it's a little bit difficult. It's a lot more difficult, I should say, to do that now. Like, if you just kind of mess around and don't get married, don't really start your career till later in life, man, you have lost a lot of years of the ability to build up a little bit of wealth, build up stability more than anything else, because maybe you're having to rely on roommates or something. You know, you're having to, you still have an entry-level job. And it's like, I just feel like the cost of waiting, not just for marriage, but waiting to really get serious about your life, the cost is a lot more expensive, both literally and not literally, metaphorically, I guess. If you wait and if you're just kind of messing around and not really getting serious about your life, I find the people that are getting real serious about their lives 19, 20, 21, they're going to be far more suited to live in the world that we're just the society that we're unfortunately in right now, which is stuff's really expensive. It's really hard to buy a house, really hard to keep a good job, to pay for health insurance. Like, if you're getting real serious about your life younger rather than older, you're just going to be more ahead and you're not going to have to catch up near as much as the 31-year-old that's like, okay, maybe I should figure out what I want to do with my life now. You're in some deep trouble if you, in 2025 if you're waiting that long.
We're in a different age than we've been before, yeah. And people are finally realizing that. We're not in the age of fun. We're not in the age of you know, loosey-goosey, endless travel. Like, we're in the age of, man, you're going to be broke, and life is tough, and you have nobody to fall back on because your parents aren't giving you a dime. And, you know, like, parents are allowing kids to stay in the basement. Well, we're going to get to the point when the boomers start dying off, like, what's your backup? You know what I mean? They spent all their money on travel and everything else because they lived a long time. And so the posterity and, you know, everything that kind of gets passed down, like, you're not going to have that. So we're going to be in a tough time period. And the faster we realize that, I think the better, where it's just different. We're not in the America that even I grew up in the 90s. That was kind of that rosy, nice, figure yourself out type of thing. And just kind of there's just a bubble that we lived in. The bubble has been popped, and we are now living in a world where if you don't have things together and don't have your ideas as to where you want to go, 19, 20, 21, I'm not saying that your life is over. It's just, it's going to be significantly harder. So yeah, that would just be to this point of, like, don't marry your high school sweetheart yet. I don't know. If you have somebody that you're connected with and somebody that you genuinely love and
don't wait,
is good for you, don't wait. Don't wait. Life is short, and you know, make the most of it. Be the best husband you can be. We got other podcasts on that. But, well, we have now gone almost 40 minutes.
Been some good discussion.
Good, yeah, good stuff. We had no idea how long this was going to go because, again, we didn't prep for this. We haven't talked about this. These are all new takes coming from Will and coming from me. So this has been fun.
Yeah, it's been great. A little disagreement on this one, which is great. I also find it interesting. The first 10 that we went over last week were a little bit more like minor and kind of practical, yeah. You know, I'm forgetting, you know, blanking on the specifics of them, but I remember they're like kind of weird, interesting ones. These ones we covered in this episode are a lot more like big picture, kind of, I don't know, esoteric almost.
Oh, yeah. So, yeah. That's why, you know, I said last week, like, this one, I like this one more just because of these things. Like, there's just more to dig into. Very high-minded. Go read the article. It's caused me to want to read more of his stuff because I just really, I thought it was thought-provoking at the very least, as you said earlier. So, yeah. Yeah, this has been episode 146. We will be back next week, of course.
Join the Discord. Get your questions in.
That's right. Get your questions in. Let us know on this as well, what you think of these 20 rules. I think we can just probably put these, when the episode comes out, we'll drop all 10, I think, in the Discord, and then you can go and engage with them. What do you agree with, disagree with? That'll get some good stuff flowing. So, yeah, we'll plan on anything else.
No, sir.
Okay. Well, this has been episode 146. We'll talk to you again next week.